Say what? Say what radio show? With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.
And welcome to the Say... Okay. Welcome to the Say What Show. My name's Nancy Hopkins. It's September 29th, 2018. And I have with myself Dolly Howard and Lee Brown. Reverend Lee Brown are joining me today. We're going to have a really good time because we always do. So I'm going to unmute them so they can talk to us. So here we go, unmuting. Hi, guys.
Hi, Nancy.
Unmuted. Hi, Nancy. And everybody.
And everybody.
I'm everybody, huh? No, I'm teasing.
Okay, now, I just want to make this preface that I went out to feed the kittens, cat, and while I was out sitting on the front porch, apparently I lost power. And so you might have had a disruption in your stream. Yeah, and of course, if you haven't got it up yet, you can't hear me tell this, but so I don't know why I'm telling it, but if you had a problem, it was a power outage here. What's a flickered? Because I've got two things that when the power just flickers enough, the clock radio goes, you know, bonkers, and another device goes bonkers, and both of those are bonkers. So, because all my electronics are on backup, so you shouldn't have lost anything, but in the turnover, maybe you did. Anyway, so we're here, and who wants to talk first? Well, second, because I talk first.
Lee?
I had to leave to rescue my cheese cracker from the dog.
Oh!
we're puppy sitting, so we have two little barkers now. Sorry about the background noises. But I knew the little one jumps up on the table, so make sure my cheese cracker was safe. Okay, we're back.
How big is the little one? I mean, because you got a little one. Well, how big is
it? I do. And the other one is very similar to mine, except only 2 years old. And he's made out of rubber and springs. He's about 8 pounds, I guess. And he thinks that the rolling table in the living room that's sort of our... Anyway, he likes to jump up on it, thinking it's his perch. And I've been working there for the last few hours. And Karen brought me a cheese cracker, which is like cheese straws, if y'all are familiar with those. They get handmade for us. They're very special. He took an interest in jumping on the table before. So I wasn't sure if I'd put it somewhere safe or not. Must protect the cheese cracker, you see.
Yes.
It's the little things. It's the little things.
Yes, every time it's the little things.
Thanks. So, another beautiful day in Atlanta. We had big plans for the company coming over, and as often happens with plans, they changed. So I've been organizing and fluttering some today. No big exciting stuff. But Nancy, I thought you were going to replay, so I didn't listen till the last half hour. And I was just had big ears.
Last half hour of what? The Cosmic Reality Show right before this?
Yeah.
No, that was a replay from Tuesday.
Oh, okay. Well, obviously, I wasn't here Tuesday either, so.
It was new to you.
It was new to me.
God. Well, the first, you wouldn't have liked the first half, because we were talking current events with Walt Silva. You know, the Kakistanian people and the Japanese and the Dragon Society and the Trump word.
I would have liked it. Well, I did like it. I heard it. I didn't hear it today. I heard it live.
Yeah. It was a fun show. I mean, the things that Ben brings up, and, you know, Ben Fulford, and the way that Walt can just talk about most anything for a long time. Well, I guess I can too, but, you know.
Yeah, that was kind of the pot calling the kettle black.
Now that I think about it, it wasn't really. Yeah, we can go on and on and on about pretty near nothing. I don't know what to talk about because it's been one of those. Well, we can talk about the Supreme Court thing, except that Lee Brown saw it totally different than we did, Dolly. See, Dolly's on my side, Lee.
What the heck?
I don't know. Yes. I don't know how people who are so together on so many levels can see the same person testify, and one thinks they're credible, and the other thinks they're not.
Well, one person was listening all day long, and one listened for 5 minutes waiting in a waiting room.
Oh, well, Nancy now, there is that point, and it was a dentist.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no,
well,
but I
listened the time until it got to, I could not make myself listen to those, I'm going to be nice, help me be nice, angels, to the Democrats interview, in quotation marks, Brett Kavanaugh, because I knew they were still going to try to crucify the guy, and I couldn't handle any more of that crap.
That's sort of the way I felt about when the Republicans were getting on him and all but kissing his butt. If there had been another brown nose in the group, I'd have had to hurt myself just to get out of it. You know, but I'll tell you that I agree with you 100% on that statement, Nance, because I said when I heard you and Dolly in praise of this fellow in the White House the first time, I about dropped my drawers. I was so stunned. So as I said to you yesterday, probably not a wise topic. And yes, I bow to y'all's longevity here, and we'll just kind of be very quiet, step back. I, oddly enough, I never thought I was a real political person, but from the first moment there was an inkling of him being there. I went in fear. That has not changed. It has only increased. I don't share the opinions y'all share. That's why I asked you one day, you know, what special information you had that could help me even begin to understand when everything inside of me is screeching. I'm not looking for the information today. I think it was the kind of, but y'all are welcome to talk about anything you'd like about regarding that. I will quietly listen.
Well, Lee, that's the thing, though, is that I don't know. Well, I read the speeches that he makes. I listen to his words, and when I read his words, they absolutely mirror what I'm feeling. I had the same viscerary kind of reaction to the guy when he was running for president. I mean, I would virtually get physically ill when he was talking for more than 2 minutes, which he always talks for more than 2 minutes, and I couldn't listen to him, and I was absolutely appalled. I mean, I actually couldn't believe that he was going to be president. I mean, none of it made sense to me. But the day that he walked out having won the presidency, it was like another guy walked out. And that's
not
what I saw. I know. And for some reason, some of us saw it. Dolly saw it from the get-go. Some of us saw it and some of us didn't. And there's people out there that were very anti-Trump who are now turning around and going, I'm wrong. Trump is doing, I mean, when you look at the statistics, and I know that if you've only looked at mainstream media statistics, you keep hearing how bad everything is. But if you actually look at the statistics, he has done marvelous things with the economy. Yeah, he's done marvelous things with the trade deficit. He's done he's making real progress with getting a handle on the immigration. He's done all and specific things. I mean, he was instrumental, if not the key. I'm sure he was the key, and it's not him. See, that's the thing, is he's only the top of the figurehead, the guy that's got the face of what's happening. He's behind him is an awful lot of other people that have set this up. He didn't walk into this and say, I'm going to do this and do that. He went in knowing that it was already done, that all of the hard work of getting everything in place to make these changes had already been put in place. And I just don't know, because I find it really interesting that so many people, and they've proven it, that people will get, if you say the word Trump to some people, their physiological makeup changes instantly to a high stress level. You know, and yet if they say Trump to me, I go, oh, goody, 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 goody. I mean, I find him amazing. I find the strategy that's going on amazing. I honor you people. I mean, good Lord, maybe you're right and I'm wrong, but, I just look at it and I get tickled because I listen to the guy. His words, not what somebody said he said, his words. And they sound exactly like the words that I would say. Well, not exactly. I think I am a better storyteller than he is. We don't have to talk about that. It's just one of those things that I continually shake my head about. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to get to make one or the other side see the difference. But I think he's gaining in strength. And I don't think he will run for another term, personally. Because I think he's going to do all what he needs to do in one term, and the next president of the United States will be John Jr., John Kennedy Jr. So that's what I think. Am I willing to bet on it? Yeah. Well, maybe. How much is the bet? I've got you guys muted. That's why you're not talking to me.
that's what I was afraid of. I was trying to tell Lee, she's not hearing you.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad I had her muted. Was she talking back about Trump?
No, I was simply saying, I think you've known me long enough to know that I don't just take in the opinions of, as you said, mainstream media, that my impressions of him go way back. Honestly, I've seen nothing that changes them, though I watch as much as I can and pay as much attention as I can. I mean, on a very, very real level, I will say that he got off on a wrong foot with me on a very visceral level when he wanted to remove the only insurance possibilities I had, being someone who was on oxygen, looking at not being able to get oxygen. So that was a very small but very real part of my initial fears when he started attacking and wanting to strip out what I lovingly and other people rudely call Obamacare, because that was the first time I was able to get insurance on my own since I was in my 20s. So, you know, most of what I'm seeing from him to me says that he has very little regard for the little person. And I won't change your mind. And I listen and I hear, and I very much asked people in the beginning, people that were very much in favor of him, I asked him with honest openness, and I still haven't been convinced. I'm one of those people that, yes, even physiologically, it makes me ill when he starts talking, and I listen to him, and it does not speak to me. It speaks to me that he's got an agenda running that show itself and does show itself. It has nothing to do to benefit the little guy.
Well, I hope you're wrong. I hope I'm right.
Yes.
Let's hope yes. Dolly and I are right, because he is the President of the United States. I see him doing amazing things. I think that, because I didn't like him at all either. I mean, I was having the same reaction initially. But like I say, once he was president and he walked out and he didn't have orange hair, he had white hair.
Yes.
You know, it's like there's two different people there. And if you are still locked in that old reality of the orange-haired Trump, you're not going to see the white-haired Trump and what he's doing. But anyway, so...
Okay. I can only bow to it, because you and I have locked horns before, and it's always afterwards that we see a different picture. So you've won a few, I've won a few. We'll see what happens. I don't want a misogynistic, egocentric, gay-hating man that I see. If you see a different person, I hope it's that different person. That's all I can hope to.
Well, I see the guy that grew up in Norman Vincent Peale's church, and I was on with Mona one day. Yeah, I love Mona, but I was running out of things to say, and I didn't know that much about Norman Peale. I really wanted to, so I Googled him, and I all of a sudden came up with sayings that he had done, you know, because he's the one that, what is it, reality is what you think it is his basic philosophy. And, oh my goodness, I kept reading these things because they were inspirational, and some of them you've heard before. I didn't know they were Norman Vincent Peale. But I look at a guy that grew up in that environment, and I can now interpret things differently than I would have had I not known that he was being taught by somebody who was saying that, you know, you're the person that's going to make your life real. And, whoa, what's happening? You got, hello? Dolly, is that you?
No, it's Lee, and I'm wondering if she's okay.
We're all good.
Oh, thank goodness.
Anyway, can you mute yourself there, Lee Brown?
I should have muted before I sat the computer back down.
Oh, okay. All right, I got it. Okay. So let's just leave politics. We'll leave it in the dust, and we'll go talk about something else. What would you like to talk about, Lee Brown? What's been happening that is interesting in your life? Uh-oh. I'm not sure that, you know, interesting is the right word. Or Dolly. Dolly,
well,
got any stories?
I would lightly touch on Dolly. Dolly and I were speaking briefly before we got on the air. She was talking about how she had had a few days where she really just had to give in to her body and lay down and rest and just do the little things. And one of the things that we've mentioned before that I struggle with the oxygen and whatnot is that, you know, I've always been an energy healer, and I believe very much, you know, that we have power over many things in our lives. Positive thought does affect things, and that our bodies give us messages, and that, you know, all of that. But what we were talking about, and again, there's a lot of less than that comes around when our body makes certain demands. But I think it's very important to honor the physical body too, that in order to have it do the things we want it to do, it has certain requirements also. And I just kind of wanted to say to Dolly, you know, no harm, no foul, you know, take those guilt-free days and let your body regenerate the energy it needs. You know, if you come from a rough spot, health-wise, and it took years for your physical body to be in that place. So it takes time now for it to, you know, be able to be doing the things you're asking it to do. It takes the attention, and I said, I just encourage you, when it's time to lay down, just lay down, enjoy the moment, and continue doing the little things that everyone suggests that you may not have thought of, and the ones that you forget to do. That's what I had trouble reminding myself. My mom spoke to that. You know, I don't know that anyone else knows that she's in having hospice care right now because the doctors have all said there's not really anything more they can do for her. And she was, last week when we spoke, she was saying that, you know, she felt like she needed a nap during the day. And I kept telling her, go ahead and take it if that's what your body needs. Oh, no, I don't want to be one of them old people that naps. And I'm thinking, you're on hospice care and you don't want to just lay down and take a nap. And so she said something to one of the nurses that comes during the week. And the nurse just bluntly said to her, well, your body's shutting down. You need to just go ahead and take a rest when you feel like you need rest, so you'll have the energy when you feel like you want to be up. And it is that simple. I mean, these are vehicles. You know, if you have a car that, you know, runs hot, you do 55 miles an hour. Well, you do 52 miles an hour, and you'll get there when you get there. It's a vehicle. You have to tend to it that way sometimes. All the positive thought in the world will help, but it's still a vehicle. You can treat your Volkswagen like a Mercedes all day long, but when you put it in the garage, it's still a Volkswagen.
You have some strange noises on that mic. I'm going to get that mic to you this week. I don't know what it is. I totally agree with you. You know that. Well, first off, I nap. Does that make me an old person? Because I've napped all my life. I think napping is a good thing. It just, you know, shut your... I used to, at work, when I was the office... Well, most places, but when I was the office manager, I would just get to a point... It was weird, because it's always 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't even have to look at the clock. And it's not dependent on time change. It's always 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I feel like, oh, man, I got to reboot. And I'd put my head on the desk, and I'd 10 minutes, I'd be out like a light bulb. But then I'd wake right back up, and I'd feel like I'd been rejuvenated. Because that's the magic of the body, is, you know, if you just let it tell you what it needs. I need to reboot. Okay, all right, okay. Boom. Oh, we're feeling better, you know. Of course, there's times where I really fell asleep and ended up drooling and stuff like that. You know, and the boss comes in. What the hell are you doing? What? Waking up groggy. But this is the guy that used to come into my office, and he'd see I was on Facebook, and he'd say, I hate to interrupt you, but it was a good job. Oh, gosh. I don't have you guys on mute, but you're not talking. Are you on mute yourselves? Are you here?
I muted so you wouldn't finish hearing the airplane go overhead.
I was muted.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I was being good.
That's right.
Sitting here listening to everybody and thinking, well, all I was trying to do for those 3 days was breathe. Wasn't anything really hard except to me.
I'll say that's another fine thing that the body likes to do. So
yeah, I
that
know.
Was a worthy pastime, I'd say.
And I was having one heck of a time breathing. But I'm feeling much better today. And my head was going to fall. It was just going to freaking blow up. I got to the point where I said, I'm ready, take me. I can't handle the blowing of my head up. But no, it wasn't time.
Did you determine whether it was from your neck sleeping funny or not?
That I did not, because after Nancy had told me about that stuff, I went ahead and I moved the shungite pad to where it was closer to my neck, up higher on my back. And I laid down, and I fell asleep. I didn't get the ice on it. I just fell asleep immediately. So when I woke up, it was better. And, of course, I forgot about the ice thing.
So the shungite rubber itself helped your neck?
I'm thinking it was probably that.
Yeah, I got to tell people. Okay, so it's not on Shungite, CosmicReality.net. It's not in the Shungite store, but you can go over to ShungiteHoney.com, and you can get this salve. It's, what did they put on? It's a salve. It's a salve. I forget what they call it. What's in it? Oh, dandelion. Dandelion, okay? I don't know. I mean, I can make up a story, but knowing for sure the science behind this, I'm still kind of, even I am a little stunned by it. Because when I had some kind of a kink in my neck this morning, and it's a kind of kink that would, without, prior to this, would within a matter of 12 hours have me at the chiropractor in absolute agony. But now I get the kink, I take this dandelion salve and I put it on my neck or my shoulders, and it goes away. Now, and it goes away very quickly. So between that, and that's how I deal with my neck issues. But every night when I go to sleep, I'm sleeping on that rubber, and it's on my lower back. So it feels like my whole skeletal system keeps going into adjustment. It's almost like having this, you know, chiropractor always adjusting. But you can go over to ShungiteHoney.com and you can get some of that salve. I can't tell you, I've seen it do really amazing things on my body. And you know, if you got a burn or a cut, you put some of that stuff on there and the healing is amazing. So you can give that a try. But I'm so happy that you at least feel better, because when I talked to you yesterday, I felt bad for you because you really had a lot of pain going.
I did. I was trying to ignore the pain and listen to your words and take them in, and oh, I was in pain. I want to clarify something to y'all out there listening. Nancy says S-A-L-V-E as salve. I say S-A-L-V-E as salve. At first, when she was saying salve, I didn't know what the heck she's talking about. I thought, what salve? Is she trying to say solve something?
So how do you say it?
Salve.
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 So yeah. Salve is not right. Salve.
No, I'm not saying it's not right.
Oh, it's probably me. It's probably me.
You just say it a different way than what I learned to say it. See, so we're both right because we were raised to say it the way we say it.
I wanted
to specify that.
I might have not learned it right. I mean, how many times did I grow up saying salve?
I don't know.
You know, but all of a sudden I've got now to talk about it. Maybe I'm the one that's wrong. I mean, we do live in the same country.
You know how a different county can make a whole world of difference.
When I was in college, I had two friends, one from Boston and one from Buffalo. And I went to, in the summer times, I would go to New York State, right? So I had to actually translate what the Bostonian was saying to the person from Buffalo and vice versa. Because they absolutely would look at each other dumbfounded and go, I don't understand what you're saying.
I know.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted them to hear my version of it as well as your version.
No, I appreciate that. You know me. I don't necessarily need to be right. I need to know. Yeah, I just want to know how to say. I mean, I do. I've learned how to repronounce words. You know, it's like sometimes when you get into a word, like dissipate versus. Now I don't remember what it is. Dissipate and. Anyway, I used to say it differently. I think dissipate is right. Anyway, but it's like once you learn the word, to relearn it. is worse than if you never heard the word in your life, you know?
Yeah.
And then I go, was it this way or is it like Whitley Strieber? Is it Strieber or Strieber? My God, I've talked about this man for 40 years. Don't I know how to say his last name? It's some kind of a glitch I have in my head. I go, Strieber. Is it Strieber or Strieber? Every time.
I have trouble with his first name. I call him Whitney.
Yeah. Yeah, Whitley. Oh, by the way, I've got a, coming up on Monday, I've got an interview that he did with Kevin Moore.
Who's that, Kevin Moore? Do I like this Kevin Moore?
Yes, Kevin Moore is really cool. You like him.
Okay.
Yeah, you like him. So that's going to be interesting. I started listening to it and then I had a phone call and, you know, I was taping it and I didn't get to listen to it, but I'll listen to it on Monday. Kevin's one of those people that I trust. He doesn't put something up that's going to be trashy. I mean, not trashy, but the sound and all that. He's good. So, yeah. But Whitley did a really interesting show on Wednesday with this guy that's a ghost hunter. Did you happen to catch that, Dolly? No, you didn't, because you were
out. I was in bed.
You were in bed.
Trying to breathe.
Yeah. Lee, you would have liked that, too, because he...
I would have.
Yeah. It was this guy that had all these different, really different kind of ghost experiences. I don't even remember the details of it, but it's up on Whitley's site at Unknown Country right now. It's the last show that he did. And he got into they got into a discussion of what's a ghost versus what's a spirit. So Lee Brown, both of you guys, you know, you got what do you guys think about that? What's the difference between spirit and soul? I mean, a ghost and a spirit.
Well, share what he said because I'm curious to know what they had to say.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I'm trying to remember what they said because all I can remember is what I said because I went on for 40 minutes afterwards talking about what they said. But I think that he was, and gosh, I wish I remembered his name. I never know these people's names. I apologize to the person. Anyway, it's basically the idea that a ghost is not a developed, well-formed spirit. A ghost is like an etheric imaging, an aspect of spirit in a personality that was alive, is now dead, but is focused on either a person or a place, sometimes events. And so this piece of the spirit ends up becoming an energy form that people that hunt ghosts go in there and they can find them. The spirit, meanwhile, it's like Dave Corso, okay? Now, Dave is not a ghost, right? Dolly, you wouldn't think of him as a ghost.
No, he's not a ghost.
Huh? You know, and the reason why is we can say that with such clarity is that you see, hear him, I hear him, other people hear him. He's not locked in a place, and he's not focused on a person. Right. So we're interacting with his spirit. You know, he can be different with you than he can be with me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he loves you. He tolerates me.
He says he doesn't tolerate you or he wouldn't be around you. He loves you.
And he's been very busy. Very busy.
Very.
But he's a well-developed personality that you feel when you're interacting with him. Whereas when I've had occasional, let's say my path crossed with somebody that would be a ghost, you know, it's feeling like it's an energy form, feeling like just an energy form, you know, that doesn't really have a full developed anything. It's just sort of like a shell, if you will, of something that was but isn't anymore, at least not in the 3D. And I don't know. I mean, I just feel that ghosts are very, very It's energy, just stuck in a pattern of personality. And the spirit is already probably gone off and done other things. Now, like my father, when all of a sudden I was thinking about him, I was sitting right here, and I turned to get up, and all of a sudden he was standing in front of me. And I went, "Dad?" And he, "Yeah." And I said, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "Well, you were thinking about me, weren't you?" And that's when it got clear to me what happens. It's like that personality of my father is part of a spirit that has had many, many incarnations, many personalities. It's all rolled into one. But when you, as me, focus on that personality of that spirit, it's almost like it doesn't quite detach, but all of a sudden it becomes, I gotta go be Uncle Phil, or I gotta be, you know, Dad, or whatever. And it interacts with us. And that's why I sometimes wonder about Teresa Caputo or you, Dolly, when you get a spirit or a ghost that's trying to communicate with you. I remember the one, Lee, I don't know if you heard this one, but because I think she was reading. You were reading. And all of a sudden, you started choking. And you started saying, "Get back, get back, get back." And I'm like freaking here. I'm thinking, "Oh my God, what's happening?" And it was a ghost of some lady that came in with such a smell of perfume that it was choking you. And you weren't, you didn't even know anything until you started choking.
Yeah.
And you told her, back off, I can't take this, you're killing me with this smell. And so she did. And then she proceeded to tell you you related to us what you were hearing from her, that she had been a suicide, she wanted to apologize to her family. Remember that? And you even got a name. And you even got a name of her.
I don't remember her name.
I don't either.
I do. Was it an M name? I'm thinking Margaret right now, but I don't know. I think we were reading about suicide, and she just got so emotional. She attacked me. I mean, she just came in, and there she was. She wasn't invited or anything, but she felt so bad about it. I think she was between the ghost and the spirit stuff. I think she was working her way up to spirit. But before she finally had that last step thing, she wanted to apologize. I hope her family heard that, whoever she was, because she was so sincere about it.
Well, you got to kind of think that maybe somebody in her family was listening to us, that she would even bother bothering you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe it was maybe many families thought it was theirs. You know, I mean.
Well, that could be.
That'd be cool, because they'd all feel better about what happened to whoever they lost.
Oh, yeah. I got goosebumps on that one. I like that one, that explanation. Yeah. I'll tell you what I think about the difference between ghost and spirit. Ghost is someone who really doesn't want to leave. They aren't ready to leave in any way, shape, or form. All of a sudden, they're over. They've died, and a lot of them don't even realize it. They're just going on living their normal life in their little place, wherever they was made for them until they were ready. There's some that know that they've passed on, and the ghosts have emotions. They're emotionally tied to, like Nancy said, where they are, the people there, so whatever's going on that keeps them emotionally tied, and they don't want to move on. So they stay here. And the spirits, sometimes you can move a ghost along. The spirits are the ones who have already, they've gone on and come back. they've gone on and they've gone through their life review, and that's a thing I always read. I don't want to do, but I know I have to. So they've done all the things that they need to do. They're like Dave. I died. Now I'm going with whoever's coming to take me, and they do whatever they need to do over there, and then they have this desire where they want to come back and participate in one thing or another. Like Dave, he wants to come back and share with us some things, and sometimes he just wants to be with us because he knows that we need some uplifting, or he wants to dance, or he just wants to communicate with the person he comes to see for a little while. But I was also have learned that he can split himself off and be several places at several different times, at the same time.
Yeah, he's been with me and you at the same time.
Yeah. So that's my thought on ghost versus spirit. What do you think, Lee?
One of the things I was pondering, or that was going through my mind when y'all were talking, was you know how sometimes there are people that come and visit, or you come across, that are very angry or frustrated or in pain or whatever, and when they leave, that energy is still sitting there. You know, when you feel that need, or I should say, when I feel that need to grab the sage and walk around the house to clear that energy. I wonder if that's not, you know, like a part of spirit that sort of splits off that aspect that is so filled with the anger. I think I agree with you, Dolly, in that I don't really think it's a fully formed spirit that's left behind.
Right.
I think it is an aspect of that person that is unable to let go of either a person or a place.
Right.
You know, a lot of times with Karen liked to watch the Ghostbuster kind of shows a lot. And it seemed like they would be attached to a place either through pain or through pride. And but yet, again, not really a fully formed personality. If they were negative, then that was what stayed behind. You didn't usually get negative and kind at the same being. There were some that were sad or that were very loving that stayed behind, but they were loving toward the place, or sometimes towards children. If it was a place that, you know, had children a lot, someone who was very attached to just being around children, mm-hmm. and wasn't willing to let go of that. I think back to when I was studying with Dr. Gentry, and he used to talk about a concept of piggyback souls that would be souls that weren't really responsible to the body, but were tied up in usually one or another type of addiction, and they would sort of attach to a body. And that made my sense also with ghosts, that they have, you know, an addiction to anger, an addiction to fear, an addiction to trauma. And that part has not been reincorporated into the spirit body.
Now, I've never heard of a piggyback. What, a piggyback ghost?
Piggyback souls.
Souls.
It's a concept that, a soul will take on a physical body, humane ants, whatever. And through some form of weakness, whether it's ill health or whether it's, I need to refresh all my memories, but these are spirits or soul in the smaller sense of soul that are wanting to continue to experience whatever that was, whether it's drinking or drugging or gambling or sex addiction or that sort of thing. And so when
there's a moment of weakness or whatever in a primary soul, the person that took responsibility for the physical body, they just kind of jump in. And supposedly they cause the person to have a predilection, I think is the word, toward whatever that particular thing is. You know, someone who was never really a gambler all of a sudden develops a gambling problem. Someone who, you know, was just all of a sudden, a lot of times, it'll build up in them. They call them piggyback souls. And as such, could be released from the person. And he had a good bit of experience with the release of piggyback souls, which allowed the other person to, the person that was responsible for the body, to make really big strides forward in their lives. Just say, call them piggybacks. I'm sure there are other names for them, but that was how he referred to them.
Huh. I would think that that sounds to me like somebody talking about an entity. They'll refer to them as an entity.
That's what I keep thinking. That's an entity jumping somebody's body. I'm taking it the wrong way.
I get confused about all of that stuff. I mean, I can talk about it from hearing stories, but I've never felt it. I've never felt like, you know, something was jumping in me. And yet people are all the time talking about, oh, I got this entity or whatever, you know. It's almost like an excuse, you know. It's not my fault. The devil made me do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I've heard those too, and I've thought that. Oh, come on. You're sitting there bald-faced lying.
Well, I don't know that they are lying. I mean, it doesn't
not
rest.
Not all of them. Some of them.
Well, it's like Lee says, you know, somebody is, this person, who did you say that you studied with?
Dr. Gentry. Yeah.
Dr. Gentry.
Dr. Byron Gentry, yeah.
Yeah, so Dr. Gentry's had enough experience to see that this is piggybacking souls. So, but you're not saying that it's an entity or some kind. It's a human being who has died, and that aspect of that human being is so fixated on the drugs, the being addicted to this thing, that they'll jump into somebody just so that they can seemingly experience the same kind of a fix. Is that correct?
Oh,
correct.
Now I get okay.
Correct.
I was thinking a different way completely. Wow.
But that kind of makes sense.
They piggyback on, and they don't have responsibility to the body. So if their drug of choice was debilitating, they didn't care because it wasn't their body. You know? It didn't matter to them if they, you know, wore the body to nothingness. What you were saying about entities, though, you know, I've had a similar sort of an attitude until that experience we had with the Moldavite. Nance, where Katri and I can't remember her husband's name, but where they were hosting the ET entities in their bodies, and it was how they wound up, said they had all that Moldavite because they were hosting ETs in their bodies, and it was like, yeah, y'all were different. I mean, I that's why I even asked them, you know, when they came to their. They worked for me, well, not for me, but they were on my night shift, psychic mind. You're down there in South Florida, and they were themselves. And then, you know, several weeks into the, I guess it was a couple of months in, because it was around the beginning of July, end of June, beginning of July, they were different. And I mean, they weren't wackadoo or nothing, but they were definitely different, both of them. And so I asked them one night on shift. I said, What in the heck is going on with y'all? And almost sheepishly, they said, well, we're hosting aliens. And I said, at your house? And they said, no, in our bodies.
Wow.
And that's when they told me about the Moldavite. And you and I went up on my birthday and met the Moldavite there that they had at the house.
Oh, Moldavite is an ET name?
Moldavite is a stone that's created when a meteorite crashed in the Moldau Valley in Russia.
Czechoslovakia.
Czechoslovakia, excuse me.
Oh.
And so it's always referred to as the E.T. Stone, but supposedly it was created by the union of meteorite and the earth plane. So for some reason, like I said, their house was filled with moldavite, just filled. It was the first time I'd met it. I think Nancy said she'd met moldavite before, but it was the first time I'd met it, and I always think with a smile about the trip from there to the birthday party, because we were on the way to the birthday party for myself. I think it was my 33rd birthday, and I had 6 pieces I had purchased, and I had them with me in the car. I know I've told this story recently, but I had them with me in the car, and Nancy was following me to this party, and all of a sudden, I noticed that she was blaring her horn at me, blinking her lights at me and everything else, trying to get my attention. That was before cell phones. And so I pulled over into a gas station parking lot, and she comes up to the window and says, told me I was driving like a crazy person, like a drunk idiot. And she said, give me the Moldavite. And I was like, oh, no, you are not getting my Moldavite. I am not. I am not. No. So she finally convinced me to put at least 5 of the pieces in the trunk. And I did that, and then obviously I drove more saintly the rest of the way to the park because she didn't flash her lights or command I move over and pull over again.
So,
do you remember any of that, Nancy?
I remember going to the you probably told me, but I don't remember them actually, probably because I couldn't even imagine it at the time, that they were actually, had opened up their bodies to be hosts for ETs. I don't remember that. How did they say they got, I mean, how, it was because they had all this Moldavite, or they got the Moldavite after they let these people in?
I have no clue. That summer was a mind-blowing summer.
Yes.
Between you and I meeting up and the psychic lines and the all of it. I mean, that was Shiva Lingam's. I mean, that was just one heck of a summer. I wish I could remember the other fellow's name. They were both K names. And I just remember the ride, and I remember getting to the party finally. I was going to tease you, though, if you didn't remember the ride, because you commented on how other people couldn't remember the party. I was like, well, they weren't the ones having horns blown at them and being insisted they give up their Moldavite, so. No, we're not going back to politics.
Moldavite is the most interesting stone. It's been considered magical since the first time they found it, Dolly. It was a meteorite that crashed into Czechoslovakia. And whatever was in the soil of Czechoslovakia, somehow or another, like Lee said, combined with whatever was in the meteorite to create Moldavite. That's what they say. Personally, I think they're picking up pieces. Moldavite, I really think it's pieces of, you know, an interspace kind of, here, we're going to give you this energy, and put it on the earth. Because all of this stuff that comes in, like the shungite, earth is going to change when you get hit with a huge amount of shungite. It's going to change when you get hit with moldavite. Every time you put a different mineral into the earth equation, we know this. We work with minerals. The stones have an energy field. So here you are careening through the universe, and all of a sudden you get hit with a totally different energy than the planet's ever seen before. This is a massive change. And in the case of Czechoslovakia, when you Moldavite was... Oh, he had some of the most amazing Moldavite I've ever seen. Because it comes really dark. It can be very dark. It can be light. We even had that black Moldavite. Remember that, Lee?
Yes, and I just hate I never kept a piece of it. Y'all got hold of that pretty quick.
Well, I had 2 pieces of it, but one of them disappeared. And I don't know where the second one is. Oh, by the way, I did get back my ruby and my tourmaline, my green tourmaline.
Excellent.
They sent those back to me. Because, Dolly, they took all my stones.
Who they?
I don't know who they were. All of a sudden, I had this for years, I had this big slice of quartz, okay? And for years, I would just start putting certain stones on this thing. And depending on how many, what stones and how you, the relationship of them, you could change the energy field in that room. And when I started working with Walt and Shungite and the reality dialer and all that, I realized that what it was like a crystal computer system. And it had the choice stuff that, you know, a huge ruby that probably, if you were to price it out, was probably be, I would think, at least in the $2,000 to $3,000 range. And I got it for a dollar. I said, well, how much of that red rock? Oh, a dollar. And I'm like, okay, you said a dollar. The green.
Did the green, you know it was a ruby?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, it was sinker.
Well, it was a North Carolina ruby, and it was in a jar. Was it like a little farmer's fair thing down here in South Florida? And this woman had a jar of stones. I said to her, in this jar there was a ruby, and it was a big ruby. I mean, this sucker is probably it's at least. I think it's 2 inches one way and about an inch the other way. And thickness, it's got to be at least three quarters of an inch. And any kind of a rock, okay, that kind of a rock, depending on the quality, that's where the pricing comes in. But it's a huge ruby. You don't normally find rubies that big to begin with. But the quality of it, it has fluctuated. The reason that I know I had taken that one away from there because all of a sudden after 40 years with it, it looked like it had gotten burnt out. It was very, very pale. It was almost a pink instead of ruby. Oh, wow. So I went and took it and put it on the Shungite pile. But I was sure I had put it back. And then it disappeared along with, like I say, everything else. The green tourmaline was another really weird stone. Crystals, okay, Lee, you know, Crystal's got this metaphysics shop. It had the books in it. It had a lot of, yeah, her mother named her Crystal after a soap opera character, right?
Yeah.
And she grows up to own a crystal store. I mean, how much better does that get? But she had this one piece, and again, it was a very thick, it's almost like a tube, like tourmaline, you know? Well, it is tourmaline. But it was black tourmaline. Now, black tourmaline is fairly common compared to green tourmaline, okay? And the only time I've ever seen green tourmaline has been in pieces that were, they're like, how would you say it, Lee? It's like a chimney thing. What do they call them? A tubular thing. And the green tourmaline that I've had is all, you know, sort of a semi-dark, but not real dark, more to the light. And so I've got this big thing, and I'm talking that thing is standing 2 inches high. And it's, again, it's about an inch and a quarter thick. And I'd go into the shop, and I'd look at it, and I didn't have the money for it. It was expensive. And I kept looking at it. And one day, I don't even know if I had the money, but I said, Crystal, I can't handle this anymore. I got to buy this sucker. And so, now I'd seen it for the last probably 3 months looking at it, because I was always over there. I gave classes there. And so I go over to Crystal, and I put it on the counter. I said, I can't believe that I'm going to do this, but I've got to buy it. I have to buy it. And so she's laughing at me, you know. And so I give her the money. At that time, we only used cash. I mean, I didn't have credit card. I used cash. So I give her the money, and she starts to pick it up to put it, wrap it in, you know, protective paper, and then put it in the bag. And she went, whoa. And I said, whoa, what? I'm looking at her, I'm going, whoa, what? And she said, did I just sell you black tourmaline? And I said, yeah, you sold me black tourmaline. She said, look at it. And I looked at it, and I went, whoa. It had turned into green tourmaline. and I was like,
more expensive than black.
Oof. I said, Crystal, I said, how could we have how could we not have seen that? I said, this is worth, you know, 3 to 4 times as much, maybe more. And she said, yep. And I said, I can't afford it. And she said, you didn't buy it as a green tourmaline. You bought it as a black tourmaline. What the hell happened right now? I don't know. I've never seen anything like this. She said, but it was in your possession when it turned green. No, I cannot ask you for more money.
Oh, bless her heart.
But, I mean, I guess they wanted me to have green tourmaline. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that ended up in a story because, do you remember me telling the story about 1989 when the Russians had a spacecraft land right outside? Well, it was 200 miles north of Moscow, but it was right in the middle of the town square. It was a small city. Okay, right in the middle of the city, a spacecraft landed. And a guy got out, and a robot got out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, go ahead. I love it.
You remember that story?
Vaguely, yes.
Yeah, well, it happened. I mean, you can look it up. You look up 1989 Russian, I don't remember the name of the city, but if you start typing in VOL, it'll probably come up. But it's, you can get it, find it on the internet. When it went all over the world. It was in the U.S. papers. So anyway, that particular thing ended up in me understanding that that's when the cat talked to me. It told me that we were about to be invaded by a extraterrestrial group that had been mining green tourmaline from the planet for a very long time, and that they had taken so much of it was really putting the planet in a precarious situation, because green tourmaline held the male essence, the male energy, whereas pink tourmaline held the female. And so now the green had been taken out to the point that the female energy was, I don't know why this would be upsetting, the female energy was overpowering the male energy. So, and that's when I saved the world, you know, again.
Okay.
And so yes. But the fact that I had this huge piece of green tourmaline that I have never seen again, you know, and the way that I got it, I always felt like this thing is magical. I mean, this is such a gift. It's like, good job, and we're going to give you a, I don't know, maybe it's a trophy or something. But when that disappeared, I said, this is not good. This is not good. You took my green tourmaline from me and my ruby. I mean, the other things I could replace. Those two, and they showed up in a place that I don't know why they were there. I mean, not something I would have done. Yeah, you know? Like, right. Oh, I was so glad. I kind of knew they'd come back. I wasn't really upset or panicky.
Well, you just told them, bring them back. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would want to bulk with you and ignore you if I was them.
Well, I didn't know who had taken it, so I just politely asked, please bring them back. Mm-hmm. They're mine. You know,
and I want them back.
I want them back. Well, you see, this was the other weird thing. Okay, so when I get the reality dialer from Walt, and we started playing with that, I think in 2014, maybe 15, and then we had the cube. We got the cube. The cube is what's out in the yard that holds the new reality down. You know.
Oh yeah.
It just keeps getting bigger and bigger. I'm only, how many things do they want in this? Whatever we're doing. And one of them was the realization that this mound of crystals that I had was actually like a crystal computer. So it's sitting there on a bookcase right in the bedroom. And I don't remember why Derek and I got into this thing. There was some reason that I said to Derek, I said, just take a scan of the property because he can do this, you know.
And Derek or Walt?
Derek. Oh, Walt can't do this type of thing.
He
couldn't do the work he did if he was this sensitive to energies.
Oh, okay.
You know, but Derek plays with the bees. And they're teaching him how to do all sorts of things. So anyway, he's looking at, he goes, wow. He says, you've got a vortex in the house. I said, what do you mean a vortex in the house? And he said, I'm telling you, I'm seeing a vortex in the house. I said, where? And he proceeds to say, well, it's in the front of the house and the dee-dee-dee-dee. He is absolutely telling me that he is seeing a vortex where the computer, crystal computer is, and the reality dialer. All right. And I said, is it in the wall? And he said, yeah, it's in the wall. And I said, oh, okay. Because, and you've heard this story. He didn't know this story. First off, if he heard it, he wouldn't have remembered it. But I was redoing the house from the inside out, and I was taking down all the inside walls, and we were putting in new electricity, rewiring, and then putting up new walls, fixing it the studs, everything. And so this guy that I'm working with, you remember the guy that was your friend initially there that had the wife, and you stayed with him when Andrew hit. Do you remember that, Lee? That guy?
They were the ones that had the birthday party for me.
That's right. Yes, yes, yeah. yes, that's right.
Yeah.
He was working in that area, and I was in the kitchen doing something, and he came into the kitchen, and he's got a funny look on his face, and he's got something in his hand. And whatever he had in his hand, immediately, I was backing up away from it. I didn't want to get near the dang thing. Why are you laughing so hard? Because you remember the story?
Yes.
Okay. So, anyway, I said, where did you get this? And it was he was taking out a stud. And a stud is a 2x4 that's running from the floor to the ceiling and holding up the wall. And we were replacing each one of these things in the walls. So when he detached it, when he started detaching it, there was something between that stud and the outside wall of the house. And it's a wooden circular thing. I don't know if you ever saw it, Lee, but it was like, I thought of it as like an eagle talons holding this globe-like thing. And whatever it was, it had such an energy signature of evil to it. I mean, I didn't know what to do with it, but I knew that he was having a reaction to it, so I said, just give it to me. And so I take it, and I go back, and I'm finding, somebody's got to negate this energy. Somebody's got to control it. And I find a number of rocks that seem to be able to get this controlled. And I left it there with that set up for decades. Okay, now how the hell did Derek know that that was in my wall that must have been, because I always felt that it was some kind of I call them anchors. When I got to do a remote view, I need to have something on the other side that to me is an anchor, will draw me in, a picture, a person, an event. Okay, like an anchor. And I always felt that that thing was some kind of an anchor, that somebody wanted to be able to get into that house. And Anne and Faye, when she did a reading for me, she said to me, she goes, okay, she starts the reading, she looks at me, she says, do you live in a spaceship? And I said, Anna, you know where I live. And she said, yeah, I'm seeing it as a spaceship. I said, oh, well, you found me out. But I found it so odd that Derek had been able to to see this. Uh-huh. And so I said, well, what do we have to do to get rid of it? And he said, well, close it down. So we both start focusing on it and closing it down, and he's going, you know, it's off, but it's still there. I said, so it's not active, but you still see a source point of a vortex. And he said, yes, exactly. And I said, well, I don't like that vortex. I've got to find something in this house. And I turned around and I looked, and I had this 5-pound brick of shungite that when we picked it up, it looked so much like this huge, huge, huge pendant piece. And I had the wire that, I mean, the piping, the copper piping that you would see, like, in air conditioners, you know, it's only about a quarter of an inch thick, you know, but it's piping. And I had a 10-foot piece of that. So we actually wrapped this sucker like a pendant. So oh. it's not, and the pendants are energy devices. So now this is a massively powerful energy device to the point that that 5-pound shungite actually shrunk. And we got it in pictures, what it looked like, and then what it looked like after it shrunk. And when I asked about it, it was, I got the message it had constricted. And that was, oh, okay. But whatever, I took that down from where it was hanging from the ceiling, took it down, and I put it right where that thing had been in the wall, where the vortex supposedly was, put it right there. And it was right, like the pile of crystal on the quartz, and then the pendant, and then the wall. Right? And then sometime after that, I go in there, and all of the crystals are gone. Well, not all of them. The three communicators that you got me at one time, you remember those communication crystals? They were pure quartz, polished points. Looked like they'd been shattered inside. They were communication devices. You remember, Lee?
Yep, the starbursts.
Starbursts. Okay, they left those three. And so at one point I'm going, so why did they leave you three? You know, and I start to play with them, and I got them in this relationship to one another. And the friggin' thing turned on, the one I had in my hand. I just happened to be in the right position. It turned on, and it was, I don't know, all of a sudden I'm like getting just this of energy from it. And I mean, to the point that I thank God I was next to the bed, because it was so overpowering that I was going down, but the bed was there. And I'm going like, oh my God, what the hell did they just do to me? And I think, you know, I think they did a massive data dump into my head. Because I know this is going to be hard for you to believe, Dolly, but I think that since then, I'm actually smarter.
Oh, no. How could you get any smarter?
I don't know. It surprised me, too. No, but it was like this massive data dump.
I can't believe it.
But then after that, you know, about 3 days ago, they brought me back my ruby and my tourmaline. So that was a nice surprise. Oh, thank you very much. Glad to have you back. I wonder what I did with them. Oh, my goodness. Do you know that we blew right through the break?
Oh.
Yes. Yes, but I was afraid to mention to you for fear, because you were in the middle of a story, and yeah.
I have so much fun when I'm on this show, and Dolly normally has to pee by now, so she would have said something to me.
Well, I do have to pee, and I'm trying not to pee my pants, but I wanted you to get to the end of the story, but I didn't realize what time it is.
Okay, all right. I'm going to put on Carly Simon, The Stuff That Dreams Are. It's 4 minutes and 20 seconds. See you on the other side.
Okay.
Take a look around now. Change the direction. Adjust the tuning. Try a new translation. Don't look at your man in the same old way. Because you don't see shooting stars doesn't mean it isn't perfect. Can't you see? It's the stuff that dreams are made of. It's the slow and steady fire. It's the stuff that dreams are made of. It's your heart and thank you. got a brand new shiny boy, and they're moving out to Malibu to play with all his pretty toys. And you feel closed in by the same four walls, the same old conversation, with the same old guy you've known for years. Use your imagination and you will see.
The Say What Show. This is Nancy Hopkins. I don't even know if I said this earlier. It's September 29th, 2018. With me is Dolly Howard and Reverend Lee Brown. And a shout out to the Grid Works in Canada. We're talking about whatever we're talking about, and apparently it was very fascinating because nobody interrupted me to take a break, so we're a little bit off on the break. How are you guys doing?
Oh. All of a sudden, you're breaking up.
I'm breaking up?
Well,
there you
are. I couldn't hear you at all. I could hear Lee's airplane,
but I
couldn't hear you.
Huh. Oh, well, I hope the other audience heard me.
If not, they didn't.
If not, they didn't. But my etheric audience did.
Yes, true.
Yeah, did you know that, Lee? That we have an etheric and a galactic audience out there? We're very popular.
I believe that.
We were told that.
Derek told us. When he was doing that miraculous healing for me, he saw him, felt him.
Oh, he had told me that before.
Oh, he had?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I said something to him one day, and he said, "You have no clue as to how many people listen to you." And I said, "Well, if they're not showing up in the stats." And he said, "Well, they're galactic and etheric. They actually get together and have listening parties."
That cracks me up.
So a shout out to our galactic brothers and sisters and our etheric brothers and sisters. Well, you know, those are nature spirits and jinn and angels and all those other critters. What's the difference between those other critters and a spirit? Do they have spirits? Do they have souls?
Don't ask me.
We'll ask Lee. She knows everything.
Yeah.
Wait, I didn't get the download from three shiny, sparkly starburst crystals. This should have been something you got in that download, I would think.
She got you on that one.
Yeah, she did. She did. Well, downloads are funny because you don't get sometimes. Well, they put information in your head that you don't need until you need it, and then you go like, "Wow, where'd that come from? It came from a download you might have gotten 2 years before that."
Yeah. NRA says she could hear us. I could hear you, Nancy.
Oh, okay. Okay. So she knows that.
Yeah. Okay, thank good. You.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So that means it was in Skype, not in the radio broadcast. It was breaking you up.
Yeah, that could be because I'm going directly over the system.
Yeah. The one thing I can contribute about that is from when I was doing more geopathic clearings, the devas of the property were all sort of parts of the oversoul of Gaia herself. So as far as kind of a soul thing, I don't know that that's the case, except with Gaia as the guiding spirit. So, each individual property that's designated has its own deva, and the deva is an aspect of Gaia herself. It's sort of the steward of the property, but it's under stewardship by whatever two-legged is taking responsibility for the property also. So it's and impacted by the same. So as I said, it is an individual aspect, but it's still part of like the oversoul of the earth. Like ants, individual ants don't necessarily have their own soul per se, but they have the oversoul of ant.
Well, I think that's true of animals too. Each animal has an oversoul. And my feeling is that an animal becomes domesticated. Well, let me put it to you this way. As you domesticate, probably it would happen with a wild, like you've had squirrels that came to you, right, over the years, Lee?
Oh, yeah, squirrels, and earlier I had a chipmunk that was hanging out talking to me. It was right. A bird.
Well, those beings, because we love them, because they, you know, we love them. Our heart energy goes into them. I think we actually imbue them with individuality soul. I mean, I know that my cats, my dogs, even, you know, critters that have been, well, birds and stuff, that they have a personality. You know, they're different. They're not, there's not just that over soul that they're all like, you know, like an ant. You look at an ant and say, oh, you got a great personality. I don't think I've ever even thought that. But if we love these beings, they start to just have a soul, an individuality. I think that's what they may mean when they say that we were made in the image of God. We certainly don't look like God, but maybe the aspect of God
now,
that allows...
Now, how do you know that?
Well, because he's an old man. I'm not an old man. I'm an old lady.
Maybe he doesn't show his age.
Well, I'm just going by the, you know, the Bible.
I just had to throw that in there. Go ahead. I was playing devil's advocate.
Uh-huh. But anyway.
Well, so, to speak to that, though, Nance, many, many years ago, one of the first course studies I took was a study of Shusta, which is an offshoot of the Kabbalah, which is an ancient Jewish teaching that goes back to the very way backs. And in Shusta, one of the things that they explained the hierarchy of soul. They explained soul progression, that you come in, you do dirt, you do earth,
as an oversoul situation, then you do rock and you do minerals and you do, then you might do a blade of grass or something like that. And then you, this is the old program.
What do you do to them?
You become them. You experience third dimension as part of the earth first. And then you move into some of the appendages like grass and then eventually tree. And into the higher levels of consciousness in the plant kingdom. And then you go through the consciousness of the animal kingdoms. This is the old teachings. We're in a whole new dimension now. I don't know if it shifted or not. But through the evolutionary process, you eventually, you know, you might have done ant for a while and then done, you know, like in India, they still revere the cow, you know. Before you do human, you do domesticated cat or domesticated dog, supposedly, so that you are experiencing that much more in the emotional realm and things like that. So I'm pretty sure I came up through dogs. Some people, obviously, to me, came up through cat, if you know what I mean. But that's where we evolve our soul understanding of spirit into third dimension and come up through the process according to Shusta. And we go from domesticated animal into a base human being.
Well, you know, I kind of agree with that. But I mean, I didn't theoretically agree with it when it was presented to me. But I had done it was Crystal actually, who was doing a guided meditation. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at this male figure on a bridge. And he's like on the other side of the bridge, and I'm on this side of the bridge. And I said, "Who are you?" And he said, "JJ," which was my cat that had come back 6 times. And he said, "I just want you to know that because of you, I've gotten to where I am." You know, in other words, my interaction with him, the lovingness of him, somehow or another, allowed him to evolve. And it was one of those, you know, flash things that you get in the meditation. And I've always wondered about that, you know, because obviously it was an indication of the continuity of soul progression through the various levels of creation. Interesting. What do you think, Dolly? Because you've had animals.
Oh, I gotta find. I'm on mute.
No, you're here.
There. Oh, I wasn't on mute?
I don't think so.
Oh. Good thing I wasn't cussing. I thought I was on mute. I like that. Thought that you could see that man on the other side, and it said it was your cat's name. I really like that because I have had animals throughout my life and lost them, and I really sometimes I wonder about the girls, Amber and Sagey, and I've wondered, do I really know these two beings? Because I just get that feeling that we're very comfortable together, even though I get so whacked out angry with Amber. That might be part of our dynamic together. But yeah, I like that.
Now the difference here is interesting to me because of these kittens. From the very first time I took a look at these three kittens, I could see their three different personalities. Nobody had interacted with them human-wise, but they had already had these very deep personalities. I've dealt with feral cats coming to this property that would... We had this one guy, we called him Boo-Boo, because he always seemed to be beat up and hurt, right? But he didn't want to have anything to do with human beings. Just feed me. Can you give me something to eat? And myself, he would stay at my yard for 3 or 4 days, and then he'd go over to Sandy's yard and stay there for 3 or 4 days, and then he'd be gone for like, you know, at least a week, and then he'd come back. So we figured he had at least two more places that he was actually hanging out. And this went on for many, many years. But he just sort of, I didn't feel that, you know, well-developed kind of character that I felt from these kittens. So I think the animals themselves are going through a massive evolution. And when I told Derek about the, you know, when Derek, oh my God, I got these cats in my, and so he says, oh, okay, and he says, well, apparently they're there because he says that this property, the Wilder Yardley, is a, like a way station for all sorts of transient people and spirits that just hang out here for a while, get rejuvenated, and then go on with their mission. And he said that these guys are here to, I'm trying to think, I don't know his exact words, but the image I got was they were here to do like almost an evolutionary jump in animal life. That it's something to do with these guys, that they're here to kind of like take an evolutionary jump in what it is to be a cat. And
well, that's what I was going to comment to you about them. just because they're feral doesn't mean that they aren't evolved souls. You know, they may have evolved well into cat and are now ready to, you know, to pull in other energies, other frequencies, other experiences so that they can move into another phase. You know, just like human beings, there are some that aren't or don't appear to be real evolved. It may be that they are not tapping into what is inside of them, but the same is true with animals. I mean, there was an amazing dog named Tater up in the mountains. We went up on, a friend of mine let us stay in her little cabin up at up near, I don't know, but up in the mountains. And she had this dog named Tater we had to look after. And Tater really was about a tater. He did fire walking before fire walking was fanciful. I really worried for his little boy parts, the little hairs on it, when he'd walk across the campfire at night. And Tater would get lost at the end. The whole thing was based, the whole lake was circled by a little dirt road. And Tater would go for a walk on the dirt road and he'd get lost. We'd have to go looking for him. He'd always be at the same spot sitting there crying because he was lost on the circle. Couldn't find his way home, you know. But then you have like Zomis, my poodle before now, or you have like Chi, who is in charge of the house, you know, very different levels of evolution within the species, if you will. So these cats, you know, even though they may have come in to a mama who's not going to become the friendliest cat, or they may all become the friendliest. Yeah, the Wilder Yard is a great place to experience many things. And of course, being around you is, you know, like, well, I hate to say it, but it's like being around me, grow or go, you know.
Well, the mama cat actually is, I can pick her up and put her on my lap. Today, I actually gave her a kiss. She was like, I was cautious because I was like, you know, she just feels so familiar to me that I was like, I'm trying, don't tell her, but I'm trying to get her so I can put her in a cage on Monday to get her fixed. So I've got her, you know, and I'm squeezing her a little bit, getting her used to me, you know, holding on to her tight to get her in the carrier. Oh, please, everybody help me do this. And, it just felt like, I mean, from the instant I met this cat, it felt like the hugger energy. In my profile on Facebook or anything else, you'll see a cat with a picture behind her. That's the hugger cat. And I got to tell you this, Dolly. You love this. I think Lee remembers the story. I look at Hugger, and she's sitting so that right behind her is a picture of a lioness. Okay? Yeah, a black and white drawing of a lioness right behind her. And I swear to God, I didn't notice the picture, you know, the obvious picture there. And I looked at her and I'm thinking, that's an odd place for her to be. And she said, take a picture.
Who said it?
The Hugger. Cat? The cat did. Oh. And I'm like, take a... And then I looked and I went, oh my God, this is like such an amazing picture. And so I took it. And that's what you see is my, you know, whatever they call those things.
Ouch.
I don't know what they call them. Yeah. So
avatars.
Yeah. But from the get-go, this new cat, Cali Cat, she had that same kind of energy. So when I'm holding her, it's like I'm holding Hugger, and I'm like, give her a big kiss. And she kind of looked out of the side of her face, you know, her eyes like, I think I like this, but I'm not sure. You know?
Yeah.
But the babies is like, I talked to the vet, and I found out that you can actually neuter kittens. Now they're saying, you know, I think it's a little bit weird because we used to have to wait like 6 months or something, but 7 to 8 weeks.
I did that with my girls, and they ended up with those dragging bellies. Yeah, you might want to ask about that.
I would rather have a dragging belly than a pregnant cat.
Oh, okay.
And these, you know, I mean, it's like, I who knows if they'll come into the house.
Yeah.
And you know, because, I mean, every time I open the door, Callie acts like she wants to come in the house. She doesn't, but, you know, it's not because the dog's behind me. I'm trying to close the door, and I don't want the dog, you know. Because he hasn't really interacted with them. I don't know what... I mean, he knows they're there. He knows what I'm doing. But I don't know what his real attitude is about them. I think it's sort of like if they stay outside, I don't give a shit. But don't let them in the house. That's
yeah.
what I think it is, you know. But the babies, so I have this conversation with the vet and everything, and ever since I had the conversation, the two females are like, I'm not getting near you. I swear, they won't come in to eat, you know? Now, the little boy, apparently he didn't get the message that he's the first one to go. He's going with mom, right? And he comes in and he's eating and everything, and I'm going, Callie, why aren't the girls coming in? Are they all right? You know, and finally I got up to see if I could see them. Yeah, they were sitting there. They weren't coming in. And I'm going like, why? I mean, Dolly was always the first one in.
Dolly's got your number.
Yeah. But they're very personable. I mean, I do lose time out there because you start to watch them and they're just so funny. They rolling and playing and, but. After the storm and the tree was gone, the ficus was gone, Lee, I threw wildflower seeds out onto the side of the house, right out front, where the ficus was, sort of. And all these flowers and stuff, bee flowers, you know, and butterfly stuff. I got milkweed out there. Nice, beautiful. Got a water fountain thingy, you know. Nice for the for the bees and the butterflies, and I'm really enjoying it. And then one day, these three cats come out of it. And the other day, I'm sitting there, and I'm just enjoying the cats, and this monarch butterfly comes flying into the picture, and that cat jumped, that kitten jumped 2 feet in the air trying to get that thing. And I'm going, oh, my God, these cats are going to be killing my butterflies. And what the? Nature, you can't plan for nature. It's just going to do what it wants. Oh, I don't know. I'm going to have to talk to them about butterflies.
Well, maybe the butterfly was playing with them.
I don't think so. It looked pretty shook up to me. Holy crap! What the hell was that?
Now she's talking to butterflies. I couldn't hear what she said, but she commented.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing. So what did you...
I was pretty astonished today. One of the chipmunks, we put up a 4 foot fence, but I don't think it's 4 foot. It comes about between my knee and my hip. So it's probably about a 3 foot fence, a wire fence around the ivy and all in the hopes of keeping the children out of it. since it's all ivy and down wood and all, it's a great place for critters. We don't want to bite the puppies. And I watched a little bitty chipmunk, probably about 3 inches, maybe 4 if you include part of the tail, jump straight up onto the top of that thing today. It was just the most amazing thing to me. And then it leapt down and was talking with the bird that I was talking about earlier. But when you were seeing the cat, when you were talking with the cat, I was seeing that chipmunk again in my mind going straight up and just sitting on the top of it like, yeah, what else can I do to impress you, lady, you know?
It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing how high they can jump.
Yes, it is. And then I thought, why am I so astonished? They leap, you know, like the squirrels leap from tree to tree, you know, and end up on some tiny little thing you'd think a bird would fall off of, but they keep going. We did see the one that I told you about, the one that fell out of the tree. We sort of nurtured it and cleaned it up and had it on the back porch in a plastic container with a metal screen over the top of it. And we came inside for about 5 minutes, and the mother came and took it back. And it was like, well, okay, I thought you were the one that threw it out of the nest. Well, we did get to see it today. We saw it up in one of the trees. It was just having a great time. So obviously, whatever happened, it made it just fine. I mean, it was limp and looking pretty bad with blood coming out of its ears and butt and mouth. But it's a happy little squirrel now.
How do you know? It's that? I mean, how could you recognize one squirrel from another?
Well, I guess.
Oh, chipmunk. Like, was it the chipmunk or the squirrel? Squirrel.
No, this was the squirrel. This right. was the baby squirrel. Well, because they don't all look alike. When you're watching them for any length of time, you see different movements and of course also different sizes because our others are much larger. These must have been the babies of the bunch, the two that got either thrown out of the tree. I think they were thrown out, to be honest, because they landed a good 15 feet apart. It wasn't like they just accidentally tumbled out of a nest, you know. I think some big bad squirrel was hurling them to the ground or something.
Actually, the mother will throw out the males if there's an overpopulation.
Well, the mother came back and gathered them up. She gathered the one first, and I don't know if that one made it or not. But we're dang certain that it was the mother that took it because there weren't any cats around. And it was almost like the lid was lifted off, and then the plastic, when they were jumping off, was knocked down to the ground. There was no blood. There was no noise. There was no nothing. I mean, we weren't even gone 5 minutes. It was like the mother was sitting there waiting until we both disappeared from the porch to come get her baby.
Wow.
So it was a pretty amazing evening, for sure.
Well, the wild animals are fascinating. That's all I can say. They're fascinating. I mean, one of the most intense experiences I ever had was with a frog, and it was sitting kind of in the inside of a pipe that was part of the fence, but the top of it had gotten knocked off or something. And all of a sudden, I'm looking, and this frog is... I actually felt like somebody was staring at me, you know? And I turned around, you know how you turn around? And here's this frog staring at me. And I could not believe the depth of intelligence I was feeling from that frog. I mean, how do we know? Maybe that's Einstein compared to us. Do we know? Just because they're not doing mathematics, do we know that they're, you know... dumb brain frog? Maybe they're brilliant, because this guy felt brilliant.
Well, maybe it was his turn to be a frog, and he still had all his intelligence.
Oh.
I listened to what Lee said.
Sadly, because in the Kabbalah tradition, from what I understand or understood at the time, you don't go back to being those things unless you're really screwing up. Because I think of all the people that want to come back as their dog the next lifetime, you know. I just kind of would say, well, you know, oh, that brings me to a fun little story, though. I guess it's kind of fun. there was a channel, Jack Purcell, who would channel a fellow named Lazarus. Now, Lazarus had never been in Earth plane, third dimension. But for a while in the, this was in the 90s, maybe, 80s, 90s, 80s, 80s, late 80s, I was gifted with several seminars, workshops when he'd come to Atlanta. And on one of the evenings, I guess it was Saturday evenings, he would just take questions from people. Lazarus would. And Lazarus has never lived in Earth plane. He's elsewhere. And he was one of the people, he was talking about evolving our soul and all of this other stuff, and that eventually we evolve out of Earth plane, third dimension. Excuse me. And this person puts their hand up and gets called on and says, well, I really like Earth plane, third dimension. And I want to be able to keep coming back. And Lazarus said, well, you remember when you were a little baby, or if you've seen babies around, and the little baby just becomes totally fascinated with its fingers and its toes and its body. And a baby will lay there for hours just sucking on its toe and just be as happy as a clam just sucking on its toe. And then as you get a little older, you discover balls or blocks, and then you get your first tricycle and your first bicycle, and then you discover boys or girls, and then you get your first car, and then you get married, and then you have kids. And the beauty of all of that is that if you really want to, you could always go back and just suck your toe anytime you want. And so we in my circle have a habit of saying that something is toe sucking, but maybe it's true of being animal too. Maybe you can choose to just do another animal lifetime as a frog, maybe.
Or
but maybe
you,
frog, that's smart.
Or piggyback.
Or well, you could piggyback, I guess.
I mean, maybe they liked being a frog, and so they said, you know, oh, there's a frog that's not doing anything. I think I'll go piggyback for a while and spook Nancy.
It is the Wilder Yard.
It is the Wilder Yard. Yeah, but Dolly won't come anymore because of the snakes. She found out I had snakes in the yard, and she won't come.
I said I won't sit in your gazebo because you have snakes. I will have you come out to the car and get me and protect me from the snakes to get in your house, but I won't sit in your gazebo.
Well, nobody can sit in the gazebo, right? Well, actually, you can. The gazebo is completely covered with with vines. I mean, just so that you have to go through the vines to get inside now, Lee. Because when Irma came, so much damage was done. There wasn't any flowering to give pollen and nectar. But these coral vines, you know those pink ones, those pink flowered ones that come on vines? They all year round, they've got flowers. So I just let them go crazy so that the bees and butterflies would have something to eat. And now that I don't know what to do with them, because it's like if I take them down, yeah, they got plenty to eat now, but they're so used to coming there. And plus the fact, if you go inside, you're inside this this complete vine-covered thing, and on the outside is bees and butterflies. It's really awesome energy. I don't think there's any snakes in there, though.
Well, how do you know? How can you tell with all the vines? Oh, my gosh, I got to change the subject. when we were, I was, I must have been 9 or 10. We lived in this little place in Indiana. We had moved to it called Roanoke, Indiana. A little tiny town. I think it had like 600 people in it. And we, my sister and I were walking from the downtown up the hill, literally up the hill, to our house that my parents were renting. And we heard this noise. And all of a sudden, I see my sister running over to a tree, and she came running back, and she had a little baby squirrel in her hand. What had happened was they were cutting trees down, and the squirrel nest got disrupted, and that squirrel evidently got lost. And so we brought it home, and Mom got a cage, and we fixed it all up and gave it the vegetables. I think we gave it vegetables and nuts and things like that, and called him Chipper. And he would sit, his favorite place to sit when he wanted to rest was in my pocket. I had a blouse with a pocket on it the first time I held him, and he climbed in that pocket, and that's where he slept for the rest of the day. And so then I had to wear, we all had to wear shirts with pockets so that Chipper could get in our little pockets and sleep there and play with us. Well, then parents found the house in Markle, Indiana that they bought because my father had gotten transferred from Toledo, Ohio to Huntington, Indiana. So they found the place that Mom fell in love with and insisted that they had to have that hell or high water. And they bought the place in Markle, Indiana. And so Mom said we had to let Chipper go. And I said, why can't we take Chipper with us? Nope, we couldn't take Chipper with us. But Chipper had, he was very rambunctious, and he'd run circles in this big cage we had for him. He got his tip of his tail caught in the corner of the cage and ripped it off. So he was very, he was marked then because he didn't have the tip of his tail. And the neighbors, we, my parents would talk with the neighbors periodically after we moved, and they would say, oh yeah, we're watching for Chipper. He comes up and gets some food from us, but he's still running around the neighborhood. And I was so relieved that that happened. So relieved. And then after we had moved to that house, I was pretty glad because that house was haunted. It was one of those old stone houses built from the big stones and the mortar in between. And it had the huge porch all across the front of it. But upstairs it had space between the attics and it was haunted. My mother would not go upstairs, but she insisted we go up there to sleep every night. But we would run downstairs and end up sleeping in my parents' bed because the ghost would come out, and it was scary. It was very scary, dark with these eyes. And oh, so we were glad to move to Markle. And in Markle, we lived across the street from the Markle Cemetery. I've been involved with spirits most of my life. I loved it there. I was traumatized when Dad got transferred again and we had to move.
I can't even imagine moving around like that. We stayed in the same place for till I was 12, and then we moved to another place, and my mother and father both were there when they passed, you know?
Mm-hmm. It traumatized me greatly, all the moving that we had to do. My grandchildren handled it really well, because Shannon being in the service, of course they were in Germany for 4 years, which helped, but they've lived a lot of places. And I've worried about my grandsons, how they were adjusting to the moving. They seemed to be pretty okay.
Yeah. Well, Lee, you grew up in the same place, didn't you? I mean, you Did you move a lot? I've never asked you that.
Well, was born in Lee Hall, Virginia, and then right near Edgar Casey, and then we moved back to Baltimore. We lived in a little row house for a while, and then lived in Pimlico for a little bit, and then moved out to Pikesville. So we were in Pikesville I started first grade there, and I made it all the way through school, and my parents are still there. So not too much moving after we got into, you know, no moving after we got into school. My brother started school in Pimlico, but then we moved to Pikesville, so he had to switch. But I've moved a lot as an adult, especially in my younger years, until I found this where I live now. I can't believe how long I've lived here. It's just astonishing, because anywhere else I've lived, I lived there a year, 2 years, 3 years, and then here I've been here for many. many. So I would say, as a child, I would say that the couple of moves that we made each presented challenges. So I can't imagine just getting settled in somewhere and making some friends and then getting yanked somewhere else. It must have been difficult, especially if you're going to have non-physical entities visiting you a lot, too.
Yeah, that was scary. And then when we moved to South Bend, we had to rent a house. So I was in that school for like 2 months, long enough that my mom wouldn't let me shave my legs. And here I am. I was in eighth grade. She wouldn't let me shave my legs. And my hairs were black, and they were long. I could braid the hairs on my frickin' leg, and they were thick. I looked like I had black, hairy legs, which I did. Couldn't see the skin through it. And so the kids would make fun of me, like poor David Wilcock. They would make fun of me like he was bullied and made fun of, and I think that's why I associate so much with him in his growing up years, because I also was made fun of until I was able to shave my legs.
And did you do it with your mother's permission, or you just did it?
Oh, I did everything with permission. I was one of those, if I didn't, I'd get beat.
Oh, dear.
I had to take my chance. Yeah, you know, my brother's there. So they went out and they bought this electric shaver, which ended up breaking the first 3 strokes I took with it because my hairs were so thick. I know. Hey, what the hell? I finally get to shave my legs and the razor breaks.
Oh, my gosh.
So they had knee highs back then, stockings that we called knee highs, kind of like leggings that were socks that came up to your bottoms of your knees or sometimes over the top of your knee. So I would wear those and try to hide as much as I could.
Here's my favorite parent torture story. My mother used to glue my knee highs up on my legs.
Oh, my gosh.
Because she hated that my socks would fall down. But I had rider's calves from riding horses, you know. But this was before then. I just blame it on riding horses later. But I had calves, and so my socks wouldn't stay up. So she would use the brown glue and put it around my leg and then make me hold my sock to it till it dried. At the end of the day, I'd have to peel my socks off. But, you know, here's my saving grace. In the 90s, the cool thing was called slouch socks. Do you remember slouch socks?
No.
Yes, I would buy socks that would fall down on purpose. And I wore slouch socks for years and years.
Oh, my God.
My revenge was slouch socks.
Oh, my God, I can't believe this, but we're at the end of the show here, and what a way to end. Slouch. Blah, 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 blah.
Slouch.
Hey, listen, yes, no, I never wore them. Give your website so people that might want to have take a look at your what your products are on there and can get a hold of you in case they want some self-help, you know, guidance, guiding to being somebody better.
I would love to do some readings and some counseling and help people evolve into who they can be. And, the website is energyweaver.com. And, I read on the phone, Skype, in person, whatever works. And if you just stuck on something or want to bring about some changes, yes, please feel free. The website will get you over to me, or you can get me at, theenergyweaver@AOL.com. And that's because Energy Weaver was taken. So on my email, it's theenergyweaver@AOL.com.
Dog, D like dog?
The as in T-H-E.
Oh,
the,
okay.
The, and I say salve as salve. And I thank y'all for letting me play along this evening.
Oh, thank you for being here. Yeah, we appreciate it when anybody comes in and visits with us, but especially you. Because remember, ladies and gentlemen, she is the person that started teaching me enterology, how to run energy. And she also is the person that brought me shungite. So there you go. She's
great. Also doesn't like Trump, but we still love her.
We still love her. Yeah, because, yes. You know. Sooner or later,
everybody's entitled to their own opinion, whether it's right or wrong.
Right. Sooner or later, we'll know who's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be a mix.
Okay. So we'll make an agreement when we find out who's right. We come on radio, and the person that was wrong has to absolutely apologize for doubting us.
Okay. Yes, for doubting us.
I don't doubt poor misguided souls. I just feel sorry for them. When they will be enlightened, and I will just sit and have this self-satisfied smile on my face. I won't need an apology. I love you all anyway.
Okay, guys, it's been lovely. I so appreciate the both of you and our audience all over
the world. Absolutely. No matter which dimension.
Exactly. And Charles, Mr. Watson's pendant is done and is on its way to you. Maybe this week. Tell him it's on its way. It's beautiful. Anyway, guys, I love you very much. Be safe, everybody. And you guys want to say adios to our listeners?
Hasta la vista, babies.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night. Be safe. Be blessed.
Say What? Say What Radio Show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.